Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Newsmakers from America and around the world speak with journalists in an unscripted and unrehearsed discussion about the critical issues facing the United States and the world. Here is your host on this edition of Press Conference USA, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. I'm Rick Pantaleo, sitting in for Carol Castiel. Our special guest on this edition of the program is Michelle Katz. She's a licensed practical nurse, a healthcare advocate, and a book author. Her latest book is called Healthcare Made Easy: Answers to All Your Healthcare Questions Under the Affordable Care Act. Michelle Katz joins us here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Today we're going to talk about the U.S. Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, as it's often referred to, and why nearly 5 years after becoming law, it remains one of the most controversial and polarizing issues in U.S. politics. We'll also take a look at how health care is administered in other countries and the issues that travelers who may have full coverage health care in their own country may have some difficulties when they travel abroad to nations such as the U.S. Welcome to Press Conference USA, Michelle.
Thank you so much for having me.
Before we get into the politics and controversy surrounding the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, I believe that's the whole title of the...
Yes. Notice how we dropped that first part of it, too. Now it's just Affordable Care Act or
right.
Obamacare.
Or ACA.
Yes.
Why don't we get a little background on this legislation? First of all, I'm sure a lot of people are curious. Why do Americans call it Obamacare?
Well, I guess the most obvious reason is our president is President Obama. And it's just easier to combat about. Everybody has differences of opinion, but we do have to understand that the original intent of the legislation was to combat rapidly rising healthcare costs and deal with the large numbers of uninsured people living in the U.S. So with that, President Obama has really combated this. So what we have to understand that insurance is just what it is. It's not supposed to pay for our bills per se. Insurance is insurance. Just like if you have a house that collapses, we have house insurance or we have car insurance. A lot of my patients are always like, well, I have insurance. Why isn't this covered? Why isn't that covered? Well, you have to look at your policy.
What does the law or how does the law help or hinder people who are seeking health care?
We all need to be our own advocates. And I started out being my own advocate. And unfortunately, we can't let somebody do the work for us. So we need to be smarter advocates. Unfortunately, on Capitol Hill, we have a lot of attorneys that have great insurance or have had great insurance. A lot of them are not in touch with reality. I'd hate to say it, but they're not. So people like me have had health insurance throughout the system. We've had problems. We've had issues happen. And not everyone is the same. Not every issue is the same. So when you have people that have these issues or have these problems, to communicate that to a congressman who's on Capitol Hill, who may be an attorney speaking in a different language than layman's language, it gets a little complicated and things get construed. Plus, with the special interest, always slip in there somehow. So it's just politics. It's just another day in D.C.
Now, the Affordable Care Act became law in 2010, but various aspects of the law were implemented in steps in the years since. When will the law be fully implemented?
We have to understand that change is very difficult to anyone. Like, for instance, the Medicare system started out completely different than the system we know today. We're going through some growing pains. Also, remember, we have members of Congress that are coming in and coming out. So you have this constant change in politics. It's like a moving target. So depending who's in Congress will depend on how the law is translated. It's kind of like that game of telephone when you tell somebody something and it gets totally construed a different way by the second, third, fifth person. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing in politics. It depends on who's there. So it's going to be ever-changing, I think.
What are a few of the critical aspects of the law and when were they or when will they be implemented?
One of the biggest things that we had happen is you cannot, when somebody has a pre-existing condition, you cannot penalize them for that. You can't say, oh, you don't have insurance. But, you know, just keep in mind, there may always be some sort of loophole. I'm always skeptical. And unfortunately, with my own past experience, I've learned to be skeptical. If you have a dependent who's on your policy, they can keep it until age 26. There are also several other things that people need to know, such as everybody's freaking out about this penalty, or what I should say, an extra tax. So the likelihood of the IRS collecting would probably happen if you are getting a tax refund back, and then they can take that away from it. And also be careful, because there's a box that you have to check off on the new tax papers that say, it's a self-attestation that says, oh, I have insurance or I don't have insurance. If you forget to check that box, they're going to think you don't have health insurance, and then you'll get dinged. But then again, we look at our system, we look at the IRS, we see sometimes they can't even get tax records from 6 months ago. So are they going to hire more people? Yes, they have. Are they going to know all the laws? I don't know.
And let's talk a little bit about the history of the ACA, its beginnings, original intentions. How did the idea of reforming healthcare in the U.S. begin?
You know, it really became an idea. I think it's been something going on for years. We have to understand the whole, even as far back as when Blue Cross Blue Shield started.
That's a U.S. insurance company.
Exactly. That is a U.S. insurance company. And it originally started out as like a nonprofit. There was the nonprofit side and the doctor side. And that even evolved. And then when President Clinton came into office, there was all this talk as early back as 1991, even before then, about some sort of reform. So it's constantly there and evolving and changing. But as prices get higher in the country, at one point, as what we're seeing now, things are going to implode and things are going to be ever changing. And healthcare prices just keep on rising because we have new technology. We have new programs coming out. The practice of medicine has changed so much from the past than it is today. So healthcare keeps on evolving. Things keep on getting more expensive. Legislation is going to change. And the way we talk about legislation, especially healthcare, is going to change. Because when I wrote my first book, Healthcare for Less, no one was talking about healthcare. And I made certain predictions that would happen, such as our diminishing healthcare providers, like our specialists. There's practically no one out there. And we have all these patients. And you have the baby boomers that are now older. And they're suffering. There's not enough providers out there for these baby boomers. So things are going to change. And I have a feeling things are going to implode before bigger changes are made.
What do you mean implode?
Well, there's this big stir up that's coming with providers. They are very frustrated. Medicare, which is for our elderly population, those insurance rates and reimbursements rates are getting cut. I mean, they were just cut another 30% recently for most procedures. And a lot of doctors are dropping out. So that's why we have smaller provider networks. The hospitals are not getting reimbursed as much as they used to back in the golden age or the 80s. So they know an insurance company is basically going to charge a certain amount. So they will almost double or triple charge that amount just because they know they're getting so little back in reimbursement. And then they'll try to take the rest of that amount and charge the patient and basically see how much the patient will actually pay before the patient starts to put up a fight and say, wait, you can't do this. And it's actually illegal to what they call balance bill if you have a program such as an HMO. So when an insurance negotiates a rate with a hospital or with a provider, they can't send you, in some circumstances, an extra bill and say, here, you're responsible for the $80,000 that wasn't part of the contract. So it's called balance billing. So you have to really look at what type of program you have, and that's mostly with like an HMO.
It does get a little intimidating as someone who has taken advantage of U.S. health care. Again, figure insurance is going to cover the bulk of it, and all of a sudden, week, a month, month and a half after you had your accident or you were sick, you get this huge bill from the doctor and from the hospital.
Right. In fact, I've helped out a few people in the past that have seen my lectures and that have called. One most recently that I'm thinking about is a man who came from Hong Kong. He was working for an investment banking firm that's internationally known, and he had to come to the U.S., and his wife was pregnant and probably going to have the baby, and he wanted to be with his wife. And actually, they were having triplets. So he was very worried that this would be complicated and wanted to be there, as any husband would want to be there for their wife. So he called up the insurance company, which he said, this is the hospital I'm going to. This is what I'm going to do. Is it covered? And the insurance company's like, yeah, sure, you're covered. Don't worry about it. You're fully covered. So he said, great. He called up the hospital he was going to go to. He goes, here's my insurance. Are we covered? And the hospital's like, you're fully covered. Don't worry about it. He didn't get anything in writing. And that's one thing when you come to the country, I hate to say it, try to get as much in writing as possible or have them actually point out what I would have said at that point, just because I've been through all these experiences, is, you know, it's nice to say, what is fully covered? Is mm-hmm. the hospital fully covered that I'm going to? Is the radiologist who's going to read the x-rays fully covered, or is he outsourced? Are my labs done in the hospital? Is the pediatrician covered? These are all things that people from other countries don't know. This man thought he was fully covered, had an $800,000 bill. And it was still going up when he called me. And he said, what's wrong with the American system? I have insurance, and I was told I was fully covered.
So what's his option then?
His option was, first of all, I said, did you read your policy? And he said, what do I need to read? I said, there was a benefits booklet that came when you signed up for this that your HR department should have went over with you, or you should have read. And he's like, who reads that?
Exactly.
It's this thick book. It's worse than the legislation.
Right.
And who understands it? And when you read it, it could be interpreted all different ways. So we went through the booklet line by line. It took a long time. And I had him go through the booklet because what I like to do is teach people to do it for themselves. Because if I do it for you, you're never going to learn. So we had him go through it and we found this little clause on the 100th page or something that said you are only covered for up to $42,000 per child. He was having triplets. And that was fully covered. He said to me, if I was still in Hong Kong, this would have been free. And $42,000 would have covered my children in the NICU for a month.
You're listening to Press Conference USA on The Voice of America. Our guest is Michelle Katz. I'm your host, Rick Pantaleo, sitting in for Carol Castiel. This is a reminder that Press Conference USA is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also contact us on Facebook at Carol Castiel, VOA, or send us good old-fashioned email to PCUSA@VOANews.com. We're talking about the ACA, and once again, there's a lot of area to be covered. I mean, for your typical American citizen that doesn't pay attention to these huge benefit books and doesn't realize what's going on, or if they're in a situation where it's not something that's anticipated, like having a child.
Right.
You're in an accident. You get sick suddenly. How do you negotiate through that? How would someone do that, especially from another country?
I mean, it's one of those things that if you don't have time to read your benefits booklet, just document everything. At least go through that first page, that summary, which is part of Obamacare or ACA, is know that front page. Part of the legislation was supposed to make it more understandable for the average person. Whether that actually happened, I don't know. But if you know, like this one person I was talking about before who had the $800,000 bill, he didn't know what page to go to or what, but if you go through certain sections, he knew he was having a baby. Yes, I know you want to trust the hospital when they say, oh yes, you're fully covered. You always be skeptical. Always look through when you talk to somebody and they say, oh, you're fully covered. Ask that question. Say what? Or what am I fully covered if you have to go to the emergency room? And the things I tell people is always look at your benefits packet when it comes to the emergency room, because that's something you're not going to have time to do when you're on the gurney or in the ambulance on the way there. So just kind of put a little dog tag on it and ask the question before you actually get to that point. If you have the opportunity to do this, kind of plan out your year. So, and when you're choosing insurance, choose it 3 months before and ask these questions too.
We were talking about the development of the Affordable Care Act, and let's get into something that's very contentious here in the United States, and that's the ongoing political controversy over the ACA. I guess one question a lot of people might wonder is, why are U.S. conservatives and the GOP so much against the ACA as it is now, and why the numerous congressional votes and efforts to repeal it?
Again, a lot of it has to do with special interest. I'm just going to say that. You know, the way I look at this, at least something was done. At least something was put on the table. And I think that's what President Obama was trying to do, is say, you know what? Let's get it out there. We'll fix it up later. Now, some people are against that and will tell you, don't put something out there until it's there. But I think it has a lot to do with special interest groups. It has a lot.
Such as?
You know, you have the doctors on one side that are struggling to get things done, to, you know, they want their reimbursements raised. Unfortunately, their lobbying group is not as strong as, say, an insurance group. The insurance groups want to be protected. So there are ways you may have protection through that, you know, on putting things through. Like when somebody's getting elected, they put it out there. They're like, this is what I want to change. I want insurance companies to have something, some guidelines, like the 80-20 rule, which they have to prove that 80% of what they are putting out there is going towards you and I who have insurance. And 20% is administrative fees, or less than 20%. So you keep everyone happy. And when you look inside the Beltway at the lobbyists here, what I found in my research is you'll have big lobbying firms that will represent an insurance company. And at the same time, they'll represent like a smaller subgroup of doctors. But the insurance company may be paying $2 million a year for the lobbyist. And the subgroup of doctors is only paying $800,000. Who do you think the lobbying firm is going to push forward first? Mm-hmm. And that's way too common in D.C.
Wasn't, well, at least the concept of the American Care Act, something that was generated by the Republicans and the conservatives?
I think it was like certain aspects of mm-hmm. it.
That, the Heritage Foundation?
Yeah, the Heritage Foundation came out. The RAND Foundation has been doing some research on that. They put something through. And then I think in the end, as things were written, there was so much debate that things kind of get construed differently. And, you know, going back to my game of telephone, mm-hmm. in order to make one side happy, you have to give a little and get a little. It's kind of like a marriage. So think of the Democrats and Republicans as a couple that's going through a tough time in their marriage. Mm-hmm. You're going to have these bumps. Someone's going to have to give a little bit. Where you're going to have problems is when both sides are adamant or stubborn, they don't want to give in, and guess what? You're going to have a divorce. And that's kind of what's going on right now with the ACA.
What about counterproposals? Of course, opposition is fine, but are there any counterproposals to the ACA that you can tell us about?
They're still ongoing. I am not certain the exact specifics of the counterproposals, but they're going to come out there as this year unfolds with 2015. There were over 42 changes the last time I checked in the legislation that have just kind of taken effect. And you're going to see little things like that, little kind of chipping away at the legislation, not completely changing it, but at least we have the skeleton. There are, you know, the pre-existing conditions, the 26-year-old, you know, even with the exemptions on who's exempt, there are rules that people don't even know about. Last time I did a lecture, somebody didn't know that if you have hundreds of thousands of dollars in medical bills, you might be exempt from paying a tax penalty. So that's one thing you have to look at. Or, you know, of course, if you're incarcerated, you don't have to pay a penalty. You don't have to have that insurance. Mm-hmm. But there are little things that are coming up. I mean, I know people that are even changing their religion because even some religions are exempt. You know, it's like a self-attestation. They're trusting us to be honest, and it's up to us to be honest, but it's also up to us to be our own advocates throughout this whole process and really do our own research.
The big talk around Washington and around the country is the King versus Burrell case on the Supreme Court. And of course, the Affordable Care Act was before the Supreme Court back in 2012. But this particular case that's coming up, I believe arguments are supposed to be given around the first week of March. Mm-hmm. I believe. And those who are concerned about the effect that this particular case will have on the ACA are quite concerned that it could destroy it should the justices rule in favor of the plaintiff.
Well, I'm not really sure of the specifics of the case, but what I can tell you there with that case, there's a lot of things that have come up, including the penalties that actually changed where they couldn't call it a penalty. It was a tax. There are certain things, whether it's constitutional or unconstitutional, to force somebody to have health insurance. I think there will be, as I said, changes, but I don't think it's going to totally appeal Obamacare. It's here. It's here to stay. There are certain things that it may change in terms of, like, tax subsidies. After 2016, the government's going to stop pumping in those subsidies. So what's going to happen?
Who's going to pay for it?
Yes, exactly. So, and then even after the year 2016, what are those tax penalties going to be, per se? So there's a lot of unknowns in the legislation. And I think it's like a hurry up and wait game. So now that we've got everybody panicked and everybody thinking they're going to get a tax, an extra tax this year, it's like, okay, let's see what happens, because there's a lot of other issues with signing up and everything. It's a moving target right now.
The rollout of the insurance didn't go according to plan.
Yeah, actually, unfortunately, I've even received emails this morning of the confusion. There was a woman who contacted me from Thailand. She's an au pair. And actually, I think the rule is if you're in the country, you're not forced to really abide. You won't get penalized for at least 2 years, but then after that you can. But, you know, she's scared. She's like, what if something happens to me? She went on to healthcare.gov, signed up, and then it gets pushed to the state, the exchange, or the insurance company. And she thought she had insurance. Thank goodness she checked. Of course, we only have a few days until it's the end. She found out she wasn't covered. So here's another problem. You have healthcare.gov, that's one system, and you have, when it goes to the state, it's a different system. They're not connecting. I've heard of this happening more than one time. Another problem is on the healthcare.gov system, when it comes to subsidies, they can adjust it for like an annual income. And then some people will actually be told on a healthcare.gov system, you actually qualify for the Medicaid program if they expand it. And the person's like, great, I can get Medicaid. This is wonderful. So then they go to the Medicaid system. And then they say, well, no, you make $100 too much. You need to go back to healthcare.gov.
So it sounds like no one's talking to each other.
No, and that's because some systems only look at your Medicaid system by a week-to-week basis. And then the healthcare.gov system can be adjusted annually by income, which is another problem, because now you're like, okay, I've got these two different computer systems not talking to each other, and I have the insurance company, and, oh, try to get in touch with them on an 800 number. It will take you all day, and you'll probably not get a live person unless you don't have a job and you could stay there all day on the phone waiting.
We only have a few more minutes left, and I wanted to ask you about this. Let's talk about what other nations around the world, how they administer health care. Now, you've got a number of countries that have something called universal health care. Which countries use it, and what's the benefits and the downfall?
Well, you have different countries, and, you know, everybody says, ooh, socialized medicine, universal medicine. You know, every country's different. Like, I have friends from, say, England, and they love it. You know, they're just like, oh, we get everything paid for, whatever. But then it depends if you're have certain, there's a shortage of doctors in some areas. And then there's a system there where you have the overall system. Everybody goes to a certain hospital, gets covered in that area. And then, like, on Friday is the day that the doctor says, all right, if you want to pay cash, if you have extra insurance, this is the day. This is where I take these extra patients. So the other problem is taxes are usually higher. However, I do have friends in Canada that say, okay, they're in California, and they're like, okay, my taxes are like 22% here in the U.S., and then they're 23% in Canada, and they're like, and I get free health care in Canada. And I've had friends that have gone back and forth and had emergencies, and guess what? They got into the emergency room in Canada. And they're like, there are all these stories about people waiting online, dying for a liver transplant. I'm like, actually, that happens here in the U.S. more than you think. So, you know, you have to be careful what you hear in the media. You got to hear it directly from the source. And, you know, as I said, different countries have different mechanisms. It's like a hybrid of systems. Actually, the English system is looking at becoming more of our system because they're losing so much money in some aspects and the taxes are so high. Then you have systems like China, which it's more about let's keep this population healthy and you get certain rewards for keeping that population healthy. And I think in the U.S., we're trying to adjust to some of those systems, but we haven't quite figured it out because, take it, we do have a large population. We do have a lot of moving parts. We do have a lot of technology here. And we do have a lot of different opinions in a different governmental system.
A little bit of advice for anyone who lives in another country and wants to travel here to the U.S. and they're concerned about their health care. What steps should they take? Is there certain insurance they should buy, or are they covered by their home insurance?
People traveling to the U.S. should be very careful. Really read your insurance if you get insurance, because a lot of insurance from overseas does not translate to, of course, now with ACA. The best advice I can tell you is, as soon as you get to the country, get to know your medical system. Find that primary doctor. Go online, read recommendations, ask friends, know what your disease is and start there from that point on. And then try to negotiate upfront with your primary care provider and make sure he or she has a great network of doctors in the area, maybe knows the hospitals. What a lot of people tend to do that are not from the country is they have a situation that they think is an emergency, and then they go to the emergency room. This can be good and bad. Maybe it's good for the person who's not from the country, doesn't have a social security number, because guess what? By the time the hospital collects, that person's not in the country anymore. It's really hard to collect. But there's also the option of urgent care centers. This person can also go to an urgent care center. And people need to understand that by law, you can't turn a person away from an emergency room. So I think that's why people go there and they don't have social security numbers. You can't check. And that's why the hospital, the provider, gets left with the bill in the end. So if you want to make friends when you're coming to the country, don't do it that way. Find an urgent care center that's local before something happens. Find out what they can do. Do they have an x-ray machine? Do they have a pharmacy there? And how much do they charge? A lot of these centers have volunteer doctors, and they're only charging $150 per visit, and they have a good network, so they can be your advocate if you need to get a test somewhere else.
Is most of this information available online?
It is. It is very, very hard to find, which is why I wrote the book, Healthcare for Less, that's available in all major bookstores. So I put all the websites there ways to find out where to find this information. But doing a Google search and finding out, you just have to do a lot of legwork. But no, the legwork you do now will pay off in the end, and you won't get that big bill if you're careful.
Michelle Katz, thank you so much for sharing your insights on healthcare, the Affordable Care Act, and the connected politics of healthcare in the United States. Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. Our thanks to Anya Zaleski for booking our guest. Our engineer was Brian McCoulier. I am Rick Pantaleo, sitting in for Carol Castiel. Join us again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. From Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, the Voice of America has brought you Press Conference USA. You can email your questions or comments about this edition of Press Conference USA to pcusa@voanews.com. And to keep up with all the latest news, tune to the Voice of America on radio, television, or the World Wide Web. Join us again next week when another newsmaker speaks with journalists about the critical issues facing the United States and the world. We'll see you next week for another edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.